Hello and welcome to Dealcast, the weekly M&A podcast from Merger Market. I'm Juliana Needham. I'm a business journalist. I've been writing about and talking about M&A for a decade. Now, to try and stem the flow of big companies listing in the US, new rules have come into force for listing in London. So, what are they and will they be enough to lure companies to London rather than New York? To find out, I'm joined by Samuel Kerr, who is the Global Equity Capital Markets Editor for Merger Market. Hi, Sam. Thanks for joining me.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Now, this isn't the first time that London's listing rules have been amended. It feels like not very long ago that there was a relaxation to some rules to allow Saudi Aramco, the Saudi oil giant, to list here. Could you talk through how significant these new rules are, please?
Well, of course, it'd be the Aramco ones firstly was interesting because that actually never happened in the end. So it's a bit of a one where the rules were changed for no benefit. But no, I think this is a big deal. It's certainly a big deal in the sense that it brings London on a level regulatory playing field now with other major global exchanges. There's no real regulatory reason now not to pursue a London listing. I think that's really, if you wanted to sort of have the big takeaway headline of this, if you were looking at London versus the NASDAQ or London versus Amsterdam, and the reason you weren't picking London was because of regulation, and I think that was the case in, you know, many, many, many companies, then I think that has now been taken away. The vast majority of what were seen as prohibitive listing rules in London have been removed by this. I think the general philosophical way that it's being sold, and I think it's probably fair to say that this is true, is that we have moved in the UK now from a system of regulation where investors were protected by rules to a system of disclosure where companies will be encouraged and told to disclose as much as possible to investors, but it will be up to investors then to make their own decisions on whether their risk appetite fits that investment. And there won't be the sort of shadow of the FCA hanging over these listings now to protect investors. So I think that's something that people really do need to take account of. It's the major philosophical change, I think, that we've seen with this.
So the FCA has made these rule changes, but it goes back a bit beyond that. Could you run through what the key changes are, please?
Sure. So as you say, it does go back a fair way. It goes back really to about sort of 2021 when Lord Hill, formerly EA of the European Union, who was working on capital markets reform there, became Lord Hill and started to look at the London Stock Exchange and what could be made more competitive. That starts in 2021, and we've had years of consultation around it since then. The biggest headline change, I would say, is the merging of the premium and standard listing segments into a single listed segment. So you're no longer going to get a case where a company has to opt for a standard listing versus a premium one. Everything will be the same. There will be no sort of differentiation between these companies listed in London. And that obviously means quite a lot of things like index inclusion, with the FTSE at the moment only getting premium companies in there. So you would have a far better chance of joining one of these major benchmark indexes under the new rules. One of the most interesting things, I think, as a takeaway is companies are going to be now able to list with dual class shareholders, something that has long been a contentious issue here in London. These share structures will give pre-IPO investors, such as sort of venture funds or founding shareholders, a period of 10 years where they have superior voting rights to the rest of the register. That will help them do things like, for example, block M&A if there's a hostile takeover bid that comes in for their companies, or give them sort of that level of control that they perhaps wouldn't want to lose, which is why lots of perhaps founders don't go for a London listing because of that. I think for you know, people interested in M&A, particularly for anyone sort of series merger market, there's a very interesting rule which is going to remove the requirement of a shareholder vote for significant M&A transactions. That is really interesting because I think it brings public bidders now onto the same level playing field as private ones. They don't have to go through that extra jump in order to make a deal happen, which I think is a super interesting thing. And I think actually that's going to make London a even more friendly deal-making exchange, which actually reputationally, obviously, always has been a very good exchange for M&A, but it's going to make it even more friendly now with public companies listed in London able to do M&A far easier. So I think what's interesting also from an M&A perspective, where you consider some of the other reforms that were brought in, particularly the secondary listing review, which was authored by Mark Austin, which now allows companies to raise 20% of their equity capital in a new share issue without preemptive shareholder subscription rights, is that combined with now the need to remove the no need to do a shareholder vote, it becomes very easy to not only raise equity capital to do M&A in London, but then to see it through. So I think London probably is one of the most friendly exchanges in Europe now for a listed company if you want to do M&A.
Thank you. And can we look at some of the opposition to these rule changes? Because the City of London is notoriously old school in lots of ways. What has been the view of some of the fund managers towards the idea of the dual class shareholders, which would give founders lots of power, putting them on a par with the kind of tech companies in the US?
There's been opposition for this for a decade over, since ever I've been reporting on equity capital markets. There is a real opposition to it because it's sort of people think that it's going to diminish the one share, one vote principle that London has always sort of prided itself on. People have suggested that loosening these reforms is going to make less sort of high quality companies listed in London. These have gone back a long way and they are very loud, these calls of opposition. But I think the counterpoint to that is a lot of these investors who make these sort of very aggressive claims about what these reforms will do to London do invest in other markets where there aren't those protections. So, you know, these investment voices don't often play by the same rules when they're looking at London versus other markets and will happily buy high growth Nasdaq stocks because of the alpha they bring. So there, I think, has been less attention now on some of these objections because of the idea of bringing London up to a level playing field with the rest of the globe, particularly the Nasdaq, which obviously is the exchange, and the New York Stock Exchange, which is the two exchanges I think that London would be most keen to emulate.
And you mentioned about the US exchanges there. Has this type of reform worked in other markets? Obviously, the US is where the precedent has been set.
Yeah, but it's worked very well in the US. I mean, so in 2012, under the Obama administration, there was the Startups Act, which is the Jobs Act, is how it's often called, which eased US securities regulation to promote business growth and allowed for easier equity investment in things like startups. And that often is credited by advocates of this London Stock Exchange reform as the beginning of what we saw as the great Nasdaq revolution, when the Nasdaq became the huge market cap exchange now that it is today. The seeds of that process are often attributed to the Jobs Act. So many of the people we spoke to, and I say it was Lucinda Guthrie and I who started reporting on this a few weeks ago and putting all these pieces together, the Jobs Act was what people were pointing towards of what they wanted to do for London. So, you know, it's a long way before we're going to get to that stage of a Nasdaq-like stock exchange. And not all of the kind of reforms that were brought in the Jobs Act are covered by this change. But it certainly, I think, is a step forward for London.
And is there anything else that's needed for UK market reform to help boost it?
Yeah, we do need to bring the capital in. That's the most important thing. That's something the Jobs Act did. It eased investment in startups. We need to create a situation where pension funds are regularly investing in UK equities and UK startups in IPOs. That's one thing that has been missing from the market for some time, and it's something that needs to really happen. I think without that and without the money coming in, you can have all the reforms you like, but we need to bring in the capital.
And away from kind of rules and regulation, are there any other fixes for the UK IPO market?
Beyond joining the European single market, which I think would probably be the easiest fix to sort of create a bit of optimism and economic growth. I'd be only joking, obviously, Brexit a long time ago, but let's not re-legislate that one. But I think there are some significant things. The government could do a little bit more as well on its front. Obviously, Labour has introduced the National Wealth Fund. Now, its remit has not been fully scoped out, but if that were able to invest in small cap UK equities or even just UK IPOs, that would be a significant boost to the market. And we see in other European countries, like sort of in France or Norway, where you have significant sovereign wealth fund or state-backed asset managers making investments in their equities, that is a huge boost to those markets. So I think some kind of sovereign wealth fund or national wealth fund investing in UK equities would be a significant step for the UK market.
And just finishing off by looking at the outlook for UK IPOs, there's been a bit of movement with an announcement today. Tell us more about that.
Yeah, there has. Not actually on the IPO front, I don't think, because I think it's probably more likely to be a spin-off rather than that, an IPO. But the very big news that Vivendi is planning to list Canal Plus in London. Probably a very interesting decision, I think, because obviously, you know, it's very French in its nature and everything else. But actually, if you look at most of its peers, most of them are English speaking and listed on English speaking exchanges. So I think this is part of that company's strategy to internationalize. And the fact to pick London, I think, is a very good step and a good marker for the London Stock Exchange that it was the natural choice for Canal Plus. Outside of that, there was a very interesting news over the weekend. Ebury, which is a Santander-backed fintech company, is looking at appointing advisors to list in London as well. There's obviously all the talk about Shein, the fast fashion company from Singapore. That one, I think, is probably a little bit longer term, just because I know there's a lot of issues that the company has to overcome, particularly around its supply chain, before it can list in London. But certainly a sign that there is more international momentum behind London listings. And probably on the slightly more traditional front, there's a lot of talk as well that Anglo-American might look to list its do a secondary listing of its platinum company in London. On the secondary listing front as well, the one that got away may come back, Arm, which is obviously very publicly did a US listing last year, is understood to be considering a secondary listing in London as well. So I think if you can get that sort of caliber of company coming to list in London and improve the makeup of the London Stock Exchange, then I think more IPOs will then follow and momentum breeds momentum. So if all of those come to pass, it will be very, very positive developments for London.
Wonderful. We'll end on a positive note. Thanks very much, Sam. That was Samuel Kerr, who is the Global Equity Capital Markets Editor. Thanks for listening to this week's episode of Dealcast from Merger Market. I'm Juliana Needham. If you've enjoyed the show, please follow it. And if you're listening through Apple, please rate and review the podcast. If you'd like to find out more about what we've been talking about, have a look at our show notes. Join us again next week.